Hello, and welcome to Historically Speaking, Uncommon History with an Unconventional Pair. I'm Rebecca Robbins.
And I'm Kim Kimmel.
I'm a singer and actress.
And I'm a retired history teacher.
He was my history teacher in college.
And now we've been married for 21 years.
Sometimes quirky, sometimes obscure.
But this is the kind of history you actually want to remember.
Hello, and welcome to episode 13 of Historically Speaking Podcast.
Oh, yes, 13.
Here we are, 13, yeah. Lucky 13. And I just want to say before we get started, this episode was inspired by my great nephew, Christian, who just turned 12, and he loves history, which we love that he loves history. And his favorite president is our 26th president,
Theodore Roosevelt.
Theodore Roosevelt, yes. The Maverick.
Yes. I think I've rarely studied anybody in history that had as much energy as this man. A contemporary of Roosevelt's said, he compared him to Niagara Falls, and he said they were both wonders of nature.
I can believe that.
Yes. Roosevelt is unique. FDR, his distant cousin, said he was the greatest man he ever knew.
Wow, that's a lot of high praise from
Especially considering that Roosevelt, Teddy, was a Republican and FDR was a Democrat.
But that was at a time when it wasn't quite as divided
No, it wasn't. It was divided, but not like it is today. No.
I don't think it's ever been as divided, has it?
Well, I think the Civil War is a good example.
Well, that's...
All right. Well, let's just start with a little background of the Roosevelt family. The first Roosevelt came from the Netherlands in, we think, sometime in the 1640s, when New Netherland existed, which existed as far back as 1609 when Hudson discovered that area and claimed it for the Dutch, certainly from 1624 onwards, and it was taken by the English in 1664.
But we're talking about present-day New York City, essentially.
Right, that's correct, right.
Including Long Island the boroughs.
The Dutch established the first posts on Manhattan, called it New Amsterdam, Neu Amsterdam. And
Dutch is impressive.
Yeah, well I don't know. And his name was actually von Rosenvelt, R-O-S-E-N-V-E-L-T, but his son Nicholas changed it to Roosevelt, the way it's spelled to this day.
Oh, what was his motivation for that?
I don't know. Maybe it's an anglicization, but of course the Dutch were still running things then, so I'm not sure why that is the case.
But it is.
The original Roosevelt, the one who came from the Netherlands, he bought a lot of property in what is now Midtown Manhattan, including where the Empire State Building now resides.
Oh, that's amazing.
So the Roosevelts have a connection with New York the whole way back.
They sure do, since its inception almost.
And then the grandson of the original Roosevelt, there were two of them, they began the two different lines of the Roosevelt. One was the Oyster Bay line out in Nassau County on Long Island.
And these are brothers.
These are brothers, and they began the two lines that extended even to this day. And the other was the Hyde Park Roosevelts up in Dutchess County, up the Hudson. By the late 19th century, the Hyde Park Roosevelts were Democrats, and the Oyster Bay Roosevelts were Republican.
Now, how much do you think that has to do with where they were physically?
I don't think it had much to do with that.
I mean, was it the politics of the area?
I don't think so. I mean, it could have been, but I think it more had to do more with just individuals' personal ideology.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know all the reasons.
I just find it fascinating that they're brothers. They both live in different parts of New York, and they become different parties.
Well, I don't think the two brothers in the 17th century. I mean, this is long before.
I mean, we're talking generations.
Right. I'm moving ahead to the 19th century because there's loads and loads and loads of Roosevelts through the 17th, 18th, early 19th century.
They just kept procreating.
Yes, and they became very, very wealthy family. The Roosevelts were good businessmen, and they became quite wealthy. Theodore Roosevelt's father, Theodore Roosevelt Sr., he was born in 1831. He would die at a very early age at 46 in 1878. He was a very wealthy businessman. He was also a philanthropist.
Was his business? Do we know?
Oh, he was involved in a lot of things. And he was a wealthy man. And he founded the Orthopedic Hospital in Manhattan. He also was a director of the American Museum of Natural History, the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And he married a Southerner from Georgia, Martha Bullock, who was called Mitty by almost everyone. And she was born in 1835. She was actually raised in Georgia with slaves. And when the Civil War broke out, she took the side of the Confederacy, and her husband took the side of the Union. So there was a difference there. In fact, Mitty had some brothers that fought for the Confederacy.
That probably made some very awkward dinner conversations.
I don't know. I think they got along very well. There were
that was a time when you could have differences of opinion.
Yes,
and discuss them.
I think that time is gone now, isn't it?
I believe it is.
Yes, that's a shame. Well, anyway, back to the Roosevelts. Theodore Roosevelt Sr. and Martha had four children. Their oldest was Anna. Their second was Theodore, the Theodore. Their third was Elliot. Elliot would be the father of Eleanor Roosevelt.
Okay.
And their last was Corinne. So they had four children. Teddy Roosevelt said that his father was the best man he ever knew, echoing what FDR said about Teddy Roosevelt. So Roosevelt, very early on, suffered from asthma.
Oh, you mean as a child?
Yeah, he was very weak as a child. So his father encouraged him to engage in physical exercise, which he came to love. He loved exercise. And he learned how to box. He learned how to do lots of things. And he actually built his body up through all kinds of arduous activities.
And it seemed to have helped with his asthma, too, I guess.
Yes, it did help with his asthma. Eventually, he's basically homeschooled, but he...
I didn't know that.
Basically,
he was brought up by a tutor, I guess?
Oh, he must have had many.
I would think so.
He was good at almost everything except mathematics and the classical languages, Greek and Latin. He happened to be very good in modern languages. He spoke German fluently. And his home was on 20th Street, where his father and mother lived, and his siblings. Eventually, he went to Harvard, graduated in 1880 from Harvard.
But while he was at Harvard, he was also a boxer, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
And did he row as well?
I think he did a lot of things.
I think he did
a lot
of athletics.
Yeah. He loved all kinds of physical activities.
And I think that's when he got his first taste of running for office, because didn't he run for some college?
Very shortly after he left Harvard, he ran for the New York State Assembly, and he would be an assemblyman, the youngest at something like 23, from 1882 until 1884. In 1880, he married his first of two wives, Anne Alice Hathaway Lee. In fact, he married her on his 22nd birthday.
Oh, he got married on his birthday.
He got married on his birthday, which was October 27th.
Double day for celebration.
Yes. And while he was an assemblyman, he did visit the Dakota Territory in 1883, and he fell in love with it. I think he had read about it.
And he wanted to see it for himself.
Yeah. And he went out there, and that was going to be a very important part of his life thereafter. A tremendous tragedy occurred with Teddy Roosevelt early on. On Valentine's Day of 1884, just 2 days after his wife had given birth to a daughter,
Where was he? Was he still out in the Dakota Territories?
No. He had just briefly been out in the Dakota Territory. He was back in New York. In fact, at the time, he was in Albany as an assemblyman.
So he was still an assemblyman at this point.
Right. And she gave birth to Alice on February 12th, and on February 14th, she died. She died from Bright's disease, which is a kidney disease, but it's worse than that.
I thought she died from childbirth.
No, they think the Bright's disease the pregnancy masked the Bright's disease.
Oh, wow.
Bright's disease is also what President Chester Arthur died from in 1886, but it's worse than that. Roosevelt's mother also died that very day.
February 14th of all days.
He lost his mother.
Two closest women in your life.
He lost his mother, whom he was devoted to. He had already lost his father, who died in 1878. He lost his mother, and he lost his wife on the same day.
That is tragic.
He wrote in his diary, "The light has gone out of my life."
Wow, that's understandable.
And this is when, shortly thereafter, he moves to Dakota Territory, and he builds a cabin there. Actually, he built two cabins, built one, then built another. He became a cowboy, a hunter, wrote many books on hunting.
He was probably running away from his heartbreak.
I think so,
trying to get away.
Yes. And the Dakota Territory made him come to respect blue-collar kind of guys, like cowboys and ranchers and all of that.
Right, and the hard work that they put in, until you experience it.
Yeah, and he was a great hunter. He knew a great deal about it, wrote many books on it. One time someone challenged him because they thought somebody who wore spectacles, as Teddy Roosevelt did, would be a pushover. He knocked him out with one punch.
This was in the Dakota Territory?
Yeah, this is in the Dakota Territory.
Okay.
And cowboys and others came to have a grudging respect for him. At first, they were skeptical. You know, this
guy was
kinda,
the city kid.
Yeah, the city guy from New York. But
he's still in his 20s at this point.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. He's only like 26 years old, 27, yeah.
Trying to find himself.
Yeah, trying to find himself. Well, he said later on that he would not have become president if he had not spent time in the Dakota Territory, that it molded him that much.
That's very influential.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of people can point back to something that was a huge influence.
Yeah, he thought that that was an enormous influence. And actually, he wrote a multi-volume work on the winning of the West. Just to mention, he wrote over 36 books. He wrote a biography on Oliver Cromwell. He wrote a biography of Gouverneur Morris, one of America's founding fathers. He wrote on hunting, as I mentioned. He wrote on so many subjects. His Naval War of 1812 is still considered a definitive work on that subject. He could discourse on virtually any area. He was a Renaissance man. But he comes back in 1886 and runs for mayor of New York City, but he doesn't win.
Oh, that's surprising.
But eventually he ends up as a civil service commissioner and then eventually ends up as the head of the police commission of New York City. He would actually walk at nights to make sure the patrolmen were doing their job and to make sure that, you know, safety prevailed.
Well, didn't he get rid of a lot of graft that was happening?
He did. Well, he was a reformer from the get-go. And yes, he did a lot.
Tammany Hall was still pretty powerful at this point.
Well, Tammany Hall was a democratic institution.
Right.
But there was a lot of graft within the Republican Party, too. Both parties were guilty of a fair amount of corruption.
I'm shocked.
One of the reasons why many standard establishment Republicans did not like Teddy Roosevelt, who was a Republican, was because he was such a progressive, because he was such a reformer. He didn't care, though. He did what he wanted to do.
And I guess he never considered changing parties, either.
No. He was from the Oyster Bay branch, which was the Republican branch, not from the Hyde Park branch. And when McKinley is elected president in 1896, he makes...
Well, wait, hang on. You're getting a little ahead of ourselves. Doesn't he get remarried at some point?
Oh, yes. Yes, the second marriage is important, isn't it? Yes.
I mean, you know.
He married the same year he ran unsuccessfully for mayor. He married Edith Carroll. That same year.
Okay.
In London. And I haven't been able to find out why they got married in London. I was looking for that.
It's almost like they decided to elope.
It was December of 1886. Edith Carroll was a childhood friend of his. They grew up together. She was good friends with both of his sisters. So he had known her for a very long time. She had never married.
And meanwhile, he has a daughter already.
He has a daughter, right? He left his daughter in charge with his sister when he went out to Dakota Territory. This daughter would become Alice Roosevelt Longworth and would live till 1980 and die at the age
of
96.
That in itself is really extraordinary.
Alice Roosevelt Longworth was a piece of work. She was a feisty individual like her father. Nobody told her what to do. There's that famous saying when Roosevelt was president, someone asked him, can you control your daughter Alice? Because she would smoke cigarettes, which of course wasn't really allowed then for women to do. And she would go to parties and all of this. And he was asked, can you control your daughter, Alice? And he said, look, I can control my daughter, Alice, or I can run the country, but I can't possibly do both.
Well, at least he knew his limits.
Yes. And then by Edith, he had 5 children. He had 4 sons and a daughter.
Okay, so let's get back to then when he's been asked to run for the vice presidency.
We're not there quite yet.
Okay.
In 1896, William McKinley ran against William Jennings Bryan for the presidency and won. And when McKinley came into office, he made Theodore Roosevelt Assistant Secretary of the Navy.
Did he ask for that position, or did he just say, hey, you want to be this?
It could have probably been a combination.
Okay.
McKinley was a little hesitant to do so because he thought of Teddy Roosevelt as a bit of a hothead.
he probably had good reason to think that.
Yes. Just as an aside, FDR, his distant cousin, would be Assistant Secretary of the Navy in the Wilson administration later on. So they held the same post. Both Teddy Roosevelt and FDR at different times.
Hmm.
By 1898, the Spanish-American War had broken out, and Teddy Roosevelt resigned in order to form his own regiment of Rough Riders.
Now, what did the president think about that?
I don't know what McKinley thought about that. He'd probably be
thought, what is
you know
guy
what?
Doing?
This fits with Teddy Roosevelt. And Roosevelt went down to Cuba. He performed heroically.
Where did he get these guys?
He got them from all over. I mean,
did he just put an ad in paper and say, hey, I'm forming this new branch of the military and we're going to go win the war?
Well, I don't know if it came as specific as an ad, but the word was put out. And
he trained them personally, didn't he?
That's right. And they came from all walks of life. I mean, some were white collar, some were blue collar. They came from all walks of life. And in Cuba, he became famous because of the charge up Kettle Hill, which became known as the Battle of San Juan Hill. And
are they two different hills, or are they just
different names? Same hill by different names.
Okay.
At least as far as I know. But he came back a hero from the Spanish-American War. I mean, here's a guy that's been New York City Police Commissioner. He's been Assistant Secretary of the Navy. He is now a war hero. He was a cowboy out in the Dakota Territory.
A lot. I mean, his visibility
He's writing all these books, and they're really fabulous books. So something happened. McKinley's first vice president, Garrett Hobart, died during McKinley's first term in 1899.
Oh.
Now, when Roosevelt comes back, he becomes governor of New York.
Well, he runs.
He runs for governor, and he wins. So he becomes governor of New York from the beginning of 1899 to the end of 1900. But a lot of Republicans who didn't like his progressivism were kind of annoyed by the fact that he was governor. And the lead Republican boss in New York was Thomas Platt. So they developed a plan to get rid of Roosevelt. They would make him McKinley's new vice president because McKinley was going to run for a second term.
Aha, that'll teach you.
And since the vice presidency is a dead end for so many individuals.
Well, especially back then, not so much anymore.
It usually has been. So they thought, we'll make him vice president, which John Adams said is the most useless office ever created by man. And Teddy Roosevelt didn't want to do it. He wanted to be governor. He wanted to run for another term and all that. But he was prevailed upon to do it. And so he accepted it. And McKinley won again against William Jennings Bryan.
So this was for his second term.
For a second term in 1900. And now Teddy Roosevelt becomes vice president in March of 1901. 6 months later, McKinley is assassinated by an anarchist at the Buffalo Exposition in New York. And
just six months into his second term.
That's right, 6 months into his term. So Teddy Roosevelt becomes president of the United States at the age of 42. He's still the youngest president in American history. John Kennedy was 43. Kennedy's the youngest ever elected, but Teddy Roosevelt beat him by 1 year as the youngest ever.
So all those people who were plotting to get him out of the way shot themselves in the foot, so to speak.
One of them said, oh my God, that cowboy is now president.
Careful what you wish for.
So it backfired on the Republican bosses who thought they had gotten rid of him. And Teddy Roosevelt took over right away. I mean, he was just a force out of nature.
He couldn't have done it any other way. It wouldn't have been him.
He took on the trusts, he took on the coal barons, he took on the railroad interests. He talked about the square deal, which really had to do with honesty across the board. He, in 1903, ensured that we would take over the building of the Panama Canal, which actually led to the creation of the country of Panama, separating from Colombia. He said if he waited for Congress to do it, they'd never get it done, so he just acted on his own.
It was probably an executive order, right?
It was an executive order. Glad you brought that up, because Teddy Roosevelt is the 26th president of the United States. The first 25 presidents of the United States combined signed a little over 1,200 executive orders. Teddy Roosevelt, in his 2 terms as president, would sign almost 1,100.
Just on his own.
He signed almost as many as every president combined before him did.
That still goes along with his personality, though.
Yep, that's right.
If I don't get my way, I'm going to find a way to do it nonetheless.
That's exactly right. And then in 1905, he brokered a peace deal between Russia and Japan. There was the Russo-Japanese War of 1904-05. And he brokered the deal at Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And we had just visited.
We just went there.
The
a few
base
months
there.
Ago.
Yes. We were just there earlier this year. And we actually saw the building where the Treaty of Portsmouth was signed, for which Teddy Roosevelt, the following year, won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Wow, as he should.
So he could be belligerent, but he knew when peace was important, too. He was a man of many, many aspects.
He was a maverick.
Yeah. In 1904, he ran for re-election against a man named Alton B. Parker. Alton B. Parker is the chief judge of New York. And he lambasted them. He won in a landslide. Teddy Roosevelt did.
Well, his popularity was probably at its height at that point.
Oh, he was the
people
most...
loved him. The politicians
yes.
hated him.
Well, so a lot of politicians really appreciated him. Not all the politicians hated him. I mean, but Teddy Roosevelt was the most famous person in America and beginning to become the most famous person in the world.
I guess he was.
Yes.
Sure.
I mean, he was...
You broker a major...
Right.
Peace deal with
you take on the coal
powers.
Barons, the railroad barons, you take on the trusts, and he beat Alton B. Parker. And then he said, once he beat him, he said, now I'm no longer an accident.
Now I'm elected in my own right.
I'm elected in my own right. And so he continues into his second term with success. I think his greatest success, he thought this was his greatest success as president, with all the conservation efforts he engaged in. He didn't like the stripping of the wilderness. He went after timber barons and railroad barons and others. He put away well over 200 million acres of land to be preserved for all time.
200? I just want to repeat that number.
Yeah, something like 225, 230 million acres.
That is incredible.
He established 50 national parks.
Isn't he the one responsible for the Grand Canyon?
Yeah, he put the Grand Canyon away as a national monument.
So many places.
Yeah.
A lot of national parks, I think, were created under him.
Yes, many. Right. That was what he considered his greatest achievement. Most historians and most people in general think his greatest achievement of all, and he had many achievements, was his conservation efforts.
Way to go, Teddy.
Yeah, way to go.
So second term. Panama Canal is
his first term, but the Panama Canal is an ongoing construction.
Right, it's still
it would not be
going
completed
on.
Until 1914, long after Teddy left the presidency. He led a successful second term. In late 1907, he sent out the American fleet, known as the Grand White Fleet, because the hulls were painted white, and it sailed around the world. It announced American power to the world. Teddy Roosevelt.
Right. Wasn't that the first major show of
American
naval power.
Naval power, yes. Right.
Was the Great White Fleet.
Right. Well, Teddy Roosevelt had read Alfred T. Mahan's The Influence of Sea Power on History, and so had many others, the Germans, the English, the French. Alfred P. Mahan was an American and wrote this fascinating book in 1890, and basically its premise was that it's navies that really matter in the final analysis, not armies. And Teddy Roosevelt...
Do you think that still holds true?
I think it is true. Yeah, I think it is true. And I think once Lord Nelson bottled up Napoleon on the continent because of the Battle of Trafalgar...
That probably proved it.
Yeah, that helped to prove it. And I think the British Navy, the reason why the Empire existed so successfully was not first and foremost because of the British Army, but because of the British Navy.
And Roosevelt saw that.
Yep, Roosevelt very much thought that a powerful Navy was...
So he built it up.
Integral, yes, he did. Integral to American power. He also developed what is known as the Roosevelt Corollary to the Monroe Doctrine. Monroe in 1823 had said that Europe no longer can interfere in the New World, all right? Butt out.
Oh, really?
Yes.
We're cutting our ties.
That's right. No more colonization. But in 1904, just to go back to the year of the election against Alton B. Parker, Roosevelt added what is known as the Roosevelt Corollary to the Monroe Doctrine, which is that Europe, you can't butt in, but America can.
Well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I understand this. Mm-hmm. So it was saying Europeans, Germany, France, whoever,
England.
You have no say in American politics.
You have no say in the Western world, North and South America. I mean, don't try to establish.
Oh, not just.
Don't try to establish any more colonies. All right. That's what Monroe said back in 1823. Now, we didn't have the Navy then to enforce it. Ironically, it was really the British Navy that helped to enforce Monroe's policy. But by the time you get to Teddy Roosevelt, we do have the power to enforce it. And
so it's okay for America to establish colonies settlements.
It was very Rooseveltian.
It's okay for us, but not for you.
Yeah. There you go. His presidency ends in March of 1909. His
president. How much is popularity at this point?
Oh, immense.
Still.
He could have won another term, but he declined to run in 1908.
He could have run for another term.
He could have. There was no 22nd Amendment that only came in 1951, preventing more than two terms. So he could have run, but he felt he didn't like the idea of running in 1908 because it smacked a little too much of dictatorship, having a person in power too long.
Okay.
I mean, maybe he regretted not doing it or whatever.
He probably did.
Well, he handpicked his successor, William Howard Taft.
Well, you can't handpick. They have to be elected still.
They they do, but
I guess if you throw your...
Occasionally, a president has so much power that he can influence his party and voters. That happened with Andrew Jackson, with Martin Van Buren. It happened with Teddy Roosevelt, with William Howard Taft.
So they just throw their full support behind this candidate and they say, this is the person that I'm endorsing.
Right.
Vote for them.
And Taft did get elected. He ran against William Jennings Bryan. William Jennings Bryan ran three times for president, 1896 against McKinley, 1900 against McKinley, and in 1908 against Taft, and lost all three times.
He never made the list.
No. It's like Henry Clay ran three times for president and didn't make it. Anyway, just weeks after he left the presidency, Teddy Roosevelt goes on his Africa expedition.
On a whim? Feeling antsy?
I don't think it's just whim with Roosevelt. He planned a lot. This was backed by the Smithsonian. It was highly organized.
I see. It wasn't just a pleasure trip.
Oh, no. This was actually a scientific expedition. They collected something like 11, 12,000 species of animals. Teddy Roosevelt would spend about a year in Africa. He went with his son, Kermit. He had a grand time. He felled a lot of animals. He was a great shot. Brought back parrots and all kinds of exotic animals.
The National
History Museum, part of the Smithsonian. Yes.
I see, okay. Mm-hmm.
By the time he comes back in 1910, he is being told by many of his fellow Republicans that Taft is too conservative, that Taft is undoing a number of his conservation efforts and so on. And so one time, Taft was his Secretary of War. They were very good friends. Eventually, he turns against Taft by 1911. And he wanted the 1912...
And does he publicly denounce him in a way?
Eventually he does, basically. Yeah, essentially he does.
And it created a very bitter feeling. That would certainly undermine his popularity.
What's so ironic here is that the perception was different from the reality. Taft put away as much land in 4 years as Roosevelt did in almost 8 years. And Taft actually launched three times as many antitrust suits as Roosevelt did.
But, so what was his beef?
Well, it had to do with the Secretary of Interior, Richard Ballinger, and certain sales of certain lands, and Teddy Roosevelt didn't like it, and the devil's in the details, and the long and the short of it is he breaks with Taft, and he decides in 1912 that he's going to go for the Republican nomination for president against Taft, the sitting Republican president. Whom he personally picked.
Now he's going to run against him.
That's right. And Teddy Roosevelt does not get the nomination. Taft does.
Now, why do you suppose that happened?
I think the party bosses were behind Taft, and I think it was...
Probably because he was much easier to deal with than Teddy ever was.
Well, that could have been a factor, too. I mean, I don't think anybody ever said that Teddy was easy to deal with.
Probably not. Not even his wife.
No. What a saint she was.
My goodness, that would have been.
Yes, Edith was a wonderful person.
She had to have been an extraordinary woman.
Absolutely. And in 1912, when he did not win the Republican nomination for president, he decided to form a third party, the Progressive Party.
Wow.
And
I can't do it this way. I'm going to do it this way.
That's right. And he was asked, how he feels. He said, "I feel as fit as a bull moose." Well, technically, the name was the Progressive Party, but henceforth, it was known as the Bull Moose Party. And in the 1912 election, he garnered some 4 million votes. Taft got some 3 million votes. The Democratic candidate, Woodrow Wilson, got 6 million votes, but got one in the Electoral College as well. And so Wilson became president.
Because Roosevelt split the vote.
Yes, and this takes us to a friend of ours who just a few days ago.
That's right.
Yes, a few days when we told him we were going to do Teddy Roosevelt as our next podcast, he said, "Well, I don't like what Roosevelt did." He said, "If he hadn't formed his third party, Taft would have beaten Wilson and we would have been better off." Now, whether we'd be better off if Taft had a second term or not is open to debate.
Sure.
But if you think that Taft would have been better off than Wilson, yes, then you can blame Roosevelt.
Right. I mean, part of that was his ego.
Yeah, because Roosevelt and Taft combined got over 7 million votes. And Wilson got 6 million, some.
So if all the people who voted for Teddy Roosevelt had voted for Taft.
Right. And we don't know for certainty that would have occurred, but I think it's likely that it would have occurred and Taft would have won a second term. Yeah. And so our friend, he thought, Teddy Roosevelt really screwed that up.
Thanks for pointing that out, Dante. We appreciate it.
Well, Teddy Roosevelt, a man of constant energy, in 1913 decided to go on an expedition to the Amazon, known as the River of Doubt Expedition.
First he's in Africa.
He's there for a full year.
And he's like, you know what? I want to do this again. I'm going to run for president. And then he loses. Then he says, you know what? I'm going on another adventure. Just couldn't sit.
And this time his son Kermit came along again. He was in Africa with him. He didn't want to go to the Amazon.
Kermit was not the oldest, correct?
No, the oldest was Theodore Roosevelt III.
Okay.
Then it was Kermit, then it was Ethel, then it was Archibald, and finally Quentin.
Quentin was the baby.
And let's not forget his oldest child was from his first wife,
Alice,
who was also Alice. So he had six children, four sons and two daughters.
Kermit seemed to be the one who wanted to go on his...
Well, Kermit was a very impressive person in his own right. He was in World War I with the British service eventually, and he learned fluent Arabic. He was in Mesopotamia, what is now Iraq, and so on. I mean, all of his children were one way or another quite impressive. So they go on this expedition with a Brazilian... To go down the River of Doubt, which was a tributary of the Amazon. And they start in December of 13. They're going to finish in April of 14. They do accomplish their task. They are accompanied by a very impressive Brazilian officer named Rondon, who had actually found the headwaters of the River of Doubt.
So they were mapping this river? Is that what they were doing?
In part, yeah. They were doing a lot of things. I mean, this was backed by the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. The African expedition was backed by the Smithsonian. This one is backed by the museum in New York.
Okay.
So it was done for scientific purposes, at least in part,
for
adventure.
Research.
But it was a disaster. Of the 19 men on the River of Doubt expedition, 3 died.
Oh, boy.
Roosevelt and almost everyone else got terribly sick. He lost 50 pounds. He had a very bad wound to his leg, to his calf, which might have resulted in amputation, but it didn't. And the expedition did finish its task, but at a high price. He came back to America. Many people think that he never completely recovered from the River of Doubt expedition, that it weakened him permanently.
Although, when you have a massive infection like that, can have long-term repercussions.
Yeah. The African expedition of 1909-1910 did not result in this, but the River of Doubt expedition in the Amazon really took a toll.
Well, the Amazon is a brutal place.
It can be. It's a magnificently beautiful place, but it is a very dangerous place. Yes, very dangerous. So Roosevelt continues to do speaking. By the way, a lot of people doubted that he went down the whole River of Doubt, and he was very angry.
They doubted that he went down the River of Doubt.
You can't make that up, huh?
But
he proved that he did, and it was proven after his death that he did. So Roosevelt was not a liar.
No. He was a lot of things, but that was not one of the...
No, he was not a liar. And he did exactly what he said he had done, but it came at quite a cost. And so he went on speaking engagements. When World War I started in 1914, he paid very close attention to the war. By the spring of 1917, America was in the war. And he asked President Wilson if he could form a regiment and fight, and Wilson was like, no.
How old was he at this point?
Roosevelt would have been about 57, 58 years old.
And at that time, that's a pretty ripe old age.
Yeah, and Wilson's chief concern, understandably, was, I don't want a former president of the United States being captured by the Germans.
Oh, man, that's the last thing.
Could you imagine that? I think some of it had to do with age. Right. And also, you know, let's face it, politics played a part. I mean, Wilson was a Democrat. Roosevelt was a Republican. Well, Wilson didn't want to give a Republican an opportunity to become, you know, have heroic status once again. So there must have been a multiplicity of reasons why Wilson refused Roosevelt's request. Roosevelt's son, Quentin, became part of the American Air Patrol.
Didn't all of his sons fight in the war?
All 4 of his sons fought in World War I. 3 of his sons fought in World War II. His oldest son, Theodore Roosevelt III, distinguished himself in World War II, including at Normandy. But his youngest son, Quentin, died at the age of 20. In 1918, when his plane was shot down. And a lot of people felt that this, as one person said, the boy lived in Teddy Roosevelt all his life until Quentin died. And he never got over that, his youngest son's death. Quentin was only 20 years old. He loved him dearly, and he was dead.
Baby.
Yeah. And Roosevelt, by this time, was very sick. He had lived 12 lives in one life.
He certainly did. And, no question about it. And that's going to take a toll. I mean, the stress.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine his blood pressure on a daily basis.
I know.
Because he just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. He never wanted to stop.
He went back to his home, Sagamore Hill in Oyster Bay. And that's where he died on January 6th, 1919.
He went back to his home
from where? He had been traveling around
just
and so on.
But
he was always on a speaking tour.
Right? Because he was never sitting down.
He was always writing on speaking tours, doing this, doing that. The man had boundless energy. I mean, just extraordinary. But he died on January 6th, 1919 at the relatively early age of 60.
That's a very early age.
Yeah, he was only 60 years old when he died. He is one of the great Americans. He was larger than life.
He was a maverick. I mean, when I looked up the definition of a maverick, he truly fits that definition.
Yes.
Someone who thinks outside the box, who does unorthodox things.
Mm-hmm. Many of his quotes are quite famous. He said, to educate a person in the mind, but not in morals, is to educate a menace to society.
Huh.
What do you think of that?
That is pretty much holds true today, I would say.
And he also said, knowing what is right means very little if you don't do what is right.
Well, I know there's a lot of great quotes that we could probably pull from Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Being
a student of the past as I am, I appreciate the fact that he had an encyclopedic knowledge of the past, from antiquity to the present. He could discourse on ancient Rome, Greece.
Do we have a definite number, how many books he wrote?
I think it's at least 3 dozen. It might be 38 or 39, something like that.
On top of everything.
On a variety of subjects. He was a larger-than-life figure.
He was larger-than-life.
Right. And
he deserves a whole episode all by himself.
Yes, especially for your grandnephew.
For my great-nephew,
your
Christian.
Great-nephew. You
Thank
go.
You, Christian, for your suggestion.
Yes.
Because this has been a fascinating episode, really.
Right.
It's almost inexhaustible. And there's so many great documentaries on Teddy himself, but also on the whole Roosevelt family, the Kid and Burden series.
And his distant cousin, FDR, would have great political talent, too, like Teddy Roosevelt did.
So is he generally considered at least in the top five?
I would say that every list of rankings of presidents I've come, he's always in the top 10.
Sometimes
he's in the top five.
He did a lot. I mean, at least for conservation alone, he's probably done more than any other president.
I just want to mention this, too. When Lincoln was president during the Civil War, he had to expand federal power tremendously and created a much more powerful executive out of necessity. But after Lincoln's death and the Civil War was over, the presidency went back to a kind of CEO position where the president was like the chairman of the board, with people like Rutherford B. Hayes and Chester Arthur and Grover Cleveland. Teddy Roosevelt changed that. He made the executive branch of the government the focus of the American government, and it tremendously expanded executive power.
Well, especially with his executive orders.
Yes. Yes.
I'm not going to Congress. I'm just going to do this myself.
Yeah, well, he said one time, he said, hey, what's the Constitution between friends? He didn't mean it, but...
No, but it comes out in some of the things that he says it does.
Right.
You know, he's going to do it no matter what.
Yeah. His wife, Edith, lived till 1948, so she lived a long time.
Wow, she must have had a lot of great stories.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that about wraps it up, doesn't it?
I think it does wrap it up. And we are considering, I think, for episode 14, presidential pardons.
Presidential pardons, yeah.
Some are controversial, some
are... Oh, yeah. Yes.
Some are like, what the heck were they thinking?
Yeah,
so we're going to take a look at that because, you know, we're about to switch presidents. And that's what every president does at the end of their presidency.
Yep. A lot of pardons come in the last week or two of a president's
term. Get them all in there.
Yep.
Okay, so we're signing off for episode 13.
Yes, lucky 13.
Yeah, and we're back on schedule, folks. So check back next Wednesday for episode 14. And until then, stay well, stay safe, and we'll see you soon.
Goodbye.
Well, friends, here we are at the end of the podcast. Be sure to check out the links in the show description to find some of the resources we used for this episode. Also, if you've enjoyed listening, please head over to Apple Podcasts and give us a virtual high five by leaving us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate that. And if you'd like to connect with us directly, you can find us at historicallyspeakingpodcast.com or follow us on Instagram at historicallyspeakingpodcast. That's it for today. And again, thanks for sharing part of your day with us. And remember, if you want to know what the future holds, study the past.